Welcome, welcome to the best 5-minute podcast with Forrest Kelly.
In this episode, we head to the area with beautiful sandy beaches, warm weather, and some say it's the mini golf capital of the world. It's also home to...
Hi, this is Lisa Lee. I'm the owner and sommelier for the tasting room on 9th in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina.
Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. So if we could just fly into Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, what are we experiencing weather-wise?
Oh, it's sunny. It's beautiful and it's sunny and it's like 80 degrees.
Who is Lisa? What did you do to get to where you are right now in your life?
Oh gosh, Lisa is at her core a dreamer. I'm very much a creative. So I have taken a bunch of different paths throughout my life. I started going to college for interior design and then left school because I wasn't really, found out later in life I'm ADHD. So I really wasn't like a school kid, wasn't my favorite. And then I went into photography, did that for a very long time, and then got interested in wine about 3 years ago and decided that I was going to study it. And then I fell in love with it. And I've always had this romanticized ideas of restaurants and hospitality. So I kind of just dove right in and tried to figure out where I wanted to work and what I wanted to do with wine. There wasn't really a whole lot of opportunity in Myrtle Beach as far as working for someone else. So I started developing this idea for a wine bar because there was a void in the market.
So you said you were a dreamer. Now, I guess maybe I, growing up, I was kind of a dreamer as well, and definitely undiagnosed ADHD. I mean, I would just get up from, I remember many times in class just getting up and leaving and going to the library and wandering around. And it was like, you know, hey, you're in fifth grade now. You can't do that anymore. I was like, yeah. I don't care. I'm bored in class. So do you remember a time when you were a child when you thought, okay, I'm a little bit different. I've got my own style and thoughts and ideas.
I mean, I think I always felt that way a little bit, but it was always kind of a joke. Like we'd be in the middle of a conversation with anybody and then I would switch mid-conversation subjects to something else. So it became this running joke, like, let's pick a subject out of the air and figure out what we've been talking about now, which was funny at the time. And now I'm like, you guys, it was a cry for help and no one knew. So once I kind of figured it out and figured out how to handle it and deal with it, it became something I leaned into because it allows me to get creative and to think outside the box and to kind of follow this roadmap that no one else has. And I think that allows me to have the freedom to change careers or do things differently within my business that I might not have done otherwise.
Yeah, and I don't think people realize that when you're that way too, that obstacles really aren't the obstacles other people see them. It's just you kind of think of it as another opportunity or something. Where did you, once you got out of high school, where did you go to school?
So I originally went to Queen's University of Charlotte in Charlotte, North Carolina. Played soccer for the school, was going, ended up double majoring or going for double majoring in business and in interior design, but left about a year and a half in. Got married super young, then found photography when my kids were little. And then, I just kind of, I've always been within that creative realm where I was doing weddings and portrait photographies and families and styled shoots and things like that.
You're not spending a whole lot of time in front of the TV binge watching shows when you're doing photography, you're doing business school, you're double majoring, you've got soccer, you've got all these things going on. When did the transition think, okay, I'm going to lean into wine and it's going to influence my career and life?
Honestly, I think it was over COVID. I was always a wine drinker, but did not drink well. Obviously, I was just going and grabbing whatever pretty label was on a shelf somewhere. And I was like, we'll try this one because I had no idea what I was looking at on bottles. And then during COVID, obviously, photography kind of took a halt. There weren't a lot of shoots. Weddings were getting canceled or postponed. And so I watched the SOM documentary, weirdly enough, and saw all of these people studying for the Master SOM exam. And I remember thinking, while I was watching them go through these note cards and have no life and all that, I was like, man, that looks incredibly interesting. which I don't know how many people would look at that and be like, that's what I want to do. Let me give up my life and study note cards. But I did and I loved it. And I think the idea that you could never learn it all and there would always be something new and every vintage is different appealed to me. There's history behind a lot of it, which is very cool. And I love food and wine at my core. I love a good meal. I love hospitality when it's done very well. So I kind of just deep dove into a lot of books while I was studying. I was a big fan of Danny Meyer and Will Goddara. They're like my Bibles that sit on my shelf. And then just a ton of wine education through the WSET. So I went 1 through 3 and then took a break after 3 and opened the wine bar.
Any future plans to be a master sommelier?
I think I will eventually go back and finish the diploma through WSET. It just depends on when I'm going to have time to do that. We just got into a year at the wine bar. I'd never worked in a restaurant prior, which probably would have helped a little bit in this journey over this past year. So it's really like boots on the ground learning. I'm like, you know, from the streets, just learning every day different things about restaurants, operations, wine, things about me as a person, as a business owner, how I want to be, how to lead a staff. That was new. So I think once we get into a flow, then I'll be able to sit back and get back into the actual setting just because I love it. But I have, a dreamer, so I have big plans for the business and how to grow it and scale it.
I've never been to Myrtle Beach on 9th. Is that a particular, is it like a typical beach where you've got the boardwalk kind of thing? Can you set the scene of what 9th looks like?
So it's not quite like San Diego or Southern California.
Okay.
There is a boardwalk, but it's not as active as it is in California, where you have houses on there and a lot of restaurants along there. It's more of kind of like a walking area. There are some restaurants along it, but definitely a family beach, a small town at its core. So it's not very big. It is growing rapidly, but at its core, it's still a very small town. So you do have a boardwalk, you do have a beach. Downtown used to be thriving in its heyday, which is why people came here. And then at one point, it kind of went a little south. People weren't coming downtown anymore. It got a little dangerous. So now they're in the process of revitalizing downtown and kind of giving it a second life. And that's where the 9th Avenue and where I am comes in.
So you had this idea with COVID kind of inspiring this to do this. How did you meet up with your business partner, Jamie?
So Jamie and I met years ago as neighbors. She had moved into my neighborhood maybe 6 months to a year after I had moved in. And we just had randomly met throughout the neighborhood and became friends. We were friends for a long time. And she and her family own Johnny D's Waffles and Bakery. And so there's three of them, and her dad moved it from New York to Myrtle Beach, and the family owns and operates all of those. When I got ready to do this, I was doing investor meetings, and she had mentioned she had some money that she was looking to invest somewhere. And I showed her my business plan and my numbers for the, 3 to 5 years and where I thought it could go. And she was interested and decided to invest in it.
So were you secretly kind of thinking I could align myself with her? Because that's a big step. You know, a lot of people don't realize how many dimensions there are personality wise where it's like, oh man, that's a deal breaker. I couldn't do business with them because they don't take customer service, to the level that I do. And I mean, I'm talking about me personally, because I'm all about the customer. And, somebody walks into my business, eye contact immediately with somebody in the staff and welcome, thank you. So had you kind of vetted her from afar or as you're doing your activities together?
Yeah, a little bit. So her business is very much like that. People love it. They come in, they touch on every table. People go through and talk to everybody, and very comfortable. She's very personable. People love her. She's on TV a lot locally, so people feel like they know her before they know her, which is important. She's very approachable and very kind. So I knew as a human, she would be great. I had tried a ton of different investor meetings, if I'm going to be honest, because I was trying not to do a family or friend, just because I was worried if something were to happen, if it didn't go right, that's still a friendship I value. But it turns out the investor meetings were not all they were cracked up to be. A lot of people didn't take me very seriously. And I can understand a little bit why. I mean, I didn't have a background in this. This was, this was something that was new for me, regardless of how organized and prepared I was. I don't think a lot of people took me seriously. So at one point I went back to her and said, if you're still looking to invest, I would very much like to sit down and speak with you about it. And we work very well together. We're polar opposites. She's very much a chef and back of the house kind of girl. And I'm very much hospitality. Let me make everything wonderful. We're going to make this the best day ever kind of girl. So we balance each other very well. And so working with her has been very easy.
Being a broadcaster my whole life, I have to consciously tone down my personality and my voice a little bit when I'm in a group setting, just because I don't want to come across as a know-it-all or loud. Being a woman in the face of a business, is that something that you consciously have to take note of, in that maybe being a softer personality, that you've got to step up and be bold and make sure that you're heard in the business community?
Yeah, I think a lot lot has to do with your personality. Jamie is very dominant, a little bit more masculine of a personality. People take her very seriously when she walks somewhere. I am very much accommodating and I try to be light and I try to make sure everything's okay. So when I want to be taken seriously, I have a harder time with it, which is unfortunate.
Yeah.
So when I knew when I had to go to the city, because the city had to approve it and then send it through city council to approve the concept to go downtown, I knew I had to come overly prepared. So I had numbers worked up for 5 years. I had individual proposals for them. I had marketing plans, on my SOPs, SWOT analysis. I mean, I above and beyond did what I needed to do because of that, just so they would look at me and know that this wasn't a frivolous idea. I took a lot of time. I know what I'm talking about. So yeah, it is sometimes a little exhausting to go that route, but
yeah,
it's just part of the course. And I kind of knew that when I came in here. And, you know, we are in South Carolina. It is a southern town.
Oh, yeah, that's
small
right.
Town. Yeah. And so it is a little different. But we have a woman mayor. She's been fantastic, super supportive. And we have a lot of women business owners within the city. So it's getting there. We're getting there.
You talk with Jamie and she likes your proposal and you do this. So that starts on day one. How long was it before you got the property? And let's go over all of the things that it took to get the business open.
Yeah, it was kind of a process. So I had been looking for a space for a while and ended up settling on downtown. There were a couple other areas I looked at, but they either didn't make business sense or they weren't a good fit. When I found the property on 9th Avenue in downtown, the city had purchased a lot of properties to revitalize. So they'd use tax credits to uplift the buildings and we were getting vanilla shells down there. So for me, that was ideal. I could come up with my own floor plan. I could design it from nothing to fully what I needed. And the creative in me loved that whole process. But I had seen the space online, I believe in November of 22. We saw it in person in January of 23. We started the lease process and didn't get that finished until August of 23. And then started construction in September of 23, finished construction in March of 24, and then opened in April of 24. So it was a long process.
That's what it takes, because you are the only upscale wine bar and craft cocktail destination. Looking back at it now, when you're standing out on the sidewalk and looking at the establishment and things, are you pretty amazed?
I have to remind myself to be amazed. I think I always see what still needs to happen.
Yeah.
Things the way that I would like them to be. I'm very much a perfectionist in that sense, which I'm learning to be a little less and delegate a little bit more. That has been a little bit hard. But I do remind myself that this was a vanilla shell and this was a piece of paper and a dream, and to take a minute and take it in and appreciate how far I've come. Somebody who didn't know what they were doing, I didn't have, you know, massive family money or, you know, a family that did this prior. So to do it from nothing to where it is, and we're still here a year later, I have to remind myself to be grateful that it's still there.
Do you remember the first time that after you got all of this together and you started to get a little momentum, was there a rocky moment where your arms were above your head, or whether it was with a crowd or by yourself somewhere, where you were just like, yes, oh my gosh, it's unbelievable?
Yeah, I think when they started the build out, like when I started seeing the walls come together, when I started seeing the bar get, you know, get installed, things like that was pretty cool. But there were definitely times that I was completely overwhelmed too. Like, it's like burned in my brain when I first got my wine delivery, because I'd been tasting with distributors for months and they all delivered within a few days. And so my wine list has over 100 bottles on it.
Wow.
And then our by the glass list is 20 to 25. So when they all got delivered, I remember sitting in the hallway and feeling very overwhelmed and getting post-it notes and trying to organize them, just putting post-it notes on the wall and organizing wines along the hallway and trying to figure out how I was going to organize this massive amount of wine for the first time. So I remember that. That'll probably always be burned in my brain.
You were by yourself?
Because I think I sat in the middle. Yeah, and I sat in the middle of it, like with a glass of wine, like, okay, here we go.
Yeah, it's a little more than just a, you know, a bar, like a bar rescue episode where you come back after commercial. Yeah. And it's like, oh, look at this new bar. Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
So
that requires a team.
Yeah, exactly. More than one person.
More than one person.
Let's just take it from the customer coming into the only upscale wine bar, the tasting room on 9th, which you guys call it TTR. Mm-hmm. So they come in, they've got their date, they're dressed very nice. What are they going to do? Let's walk us through what they, when they come in, sit down, and all the options that they have.
Sure. Yeah. So if they have a reservation, their table is already set. We walk them to their table. If not, we ask if they'd like a table, if they'd like to sit in the lounge. We have a couple lounge furniture area near the window, or we at the bar. So either way, wherever they're seated, they'll go, and then we'll ask if, you know, what kind of water would you like? That's where it kind of starts. Would you like sparkling? Would you like still? Would you like tap? And then from there, the server will come over and give you all your tap, just tap water, regular water.
Oh, tap. Okay. That's an East Coast thing. What is?
Yeah, just right out of like the gun. So it's still slightly filtered, but it's not bottled.
Okay. Interesting.
So then we'll just go through, we kind of explain the menus. We have one menu that has all your by the glass for cocktails, for wine, for beer, non-alcoholics. And then we have a full wine list. So we present that and then the food menus. And then from there, we kind of either give suggestions on pairings or if they want me to come over and talk to them about the wine list, I do. And then from there, we just kind of, it's just proactive service is what I try to do, anticipating needs prior to them even realizing there's needs, so refilling glasses prior to them becoming even close to being empty, or pre-bussing tables to make sure that we're aware of the space because our tables aren't huge. And that way we're making room for whatever the next course is, or if they want dessert, or if it's a birthday or if it's an anniversary, then we're making sure that we have, you know, something to celebrate their birthday or something to celebrate their anniversary that we do just complimentary, because I love an experience. Yep. And I think if you choose to come into our place to celebrate something, that's a huge compliment to me, because you can go anywhere. And so why, if you're here, then we need to make it the best that we can make it while you're in this building, because you don't have to come back and you don't have to celebrate big moments here. And so when you do, I very much feel personally responsible to make sure that night goes well, because it's going to be a memory.
So when you hand them the wine list, this isn't a laminated piece of plastic on a one sheet 8x8.5x11. What is the wine list?
No. So it's a soft leather cover and backing, like almost like a small binder type thing, but soft leather. It has our logo on the front of it. And when you open it, there's a short letter that I wrote just welcoming them, excited that they're going to travel through this wine list that I've created. And then from there, it goes in different sections, but it's cardstock paper. I don't love a laminated unless I absolutely have to do it. I would rather just eat the cost and reprint if I have to. But they're all the cardstock paper that we have printed on. And I tried to categorize it in a way that was a little bit more familiar, a little bit more approachable. So we have interesting reds, or, you know, Italian reds, or bold reds, or crisp whites, or sparkling and sweet. So I'm trying to make it a little bit easier to navigate than just by varietal or by region. I think originally I had by region, and then I had to punch myself in the face. Like, listen, you unapproachable person who knows wine, remember when you didn't? Don't do this to people. It's rude. So we're trying to make it a little bit easier, because it can get confusing when you get into these different regions. And I don't want it to be confusing. Then you don't want to buy anything or say anything, or it becomes intimidating.
You buried the lead there, Lisa. So soft leather. Now, when you say soft leather, how many different tactical feels of to putting this whole presentation together did you go through? Did it take you 20 minutes or 10 hours or what? Take us through that.
Oh, no, it probably took me days for every last menu that I did. Our regular menus are also paper, but my staff hates them, because when we have to take them apart and put them together, there's like two screws that we have to screw in the top because they're wood. But on the back, it has our logo like burned into it. So I'm very, very detail oriented. I like things that are very pretty, but also durable and functional. So it took me probably too much time to pick out everything that we put in there. Our by the glass menu, same thing. They're wood and leather. It's leather on the binding and then wood, and then our logo's burned into that too. So with paper on the inside. So I took a lot of time, a lot of time doing them.
Well, and to be applauded for that, because that's one of the reasons I started the podcast, was to take down the snootiness of wine and bring it down to approachable things. And there is nothing that just bugs me more than going to a restaurant and they hand you a dirty menu, or a menu that's just tattered or rabbit-eared. You are attention to detail, and you want that experience when they're handed that menu for that to feel nice in their hands and go, wow, this is something to be treasured, and this is an important decision we're going to make on the wine.
Well, I figure you're spending time there, right? You're spending your money and your time, and those are two things you're not getting back. It better be worth it.
Chef-driven cuisine. This is coming from Jamie, right?
Yeah. So when we opened, I had had her come up with the original concept for all the food, because obviously I wasn't a chef and I was a little overwhelmed with everything else. And then as we've grown, it's changed. It's ebbed and flowed. I had a little bit more say in the charcuterie as we grew, because that was the only thing I can do. I can't cook, but I can do a charcuterie board with the best of them. And we have a phenomenal one. I can pick out cheeses, things like that. That's grown. That's been something that's a huge draw for us, because this area just didn't, candidly, they just didn't have a lot of really great charcuterie options or boards when you went out places. They're starting to now, but they didn't when we opened. We did that. And then the menu, we listened to people as they came in over the year. And because the downtown isn't built up, we're more of a destination than just a stop along the way. So we had to put in some heartier items onto our menus. We have some seafood pastas now and some chicken dishes and things like that we didn't at the beginning. But I've really worked a lot too with US Foods. We get a lot of our stuff from US Foods. I didn't realize that when you do that, they will kind of partner with you on something. So I was lucky enough to meet Chef Robert Kaufman, who is the US Foods fanatic here in Myrtle Beach. And so he has helped me with the menu as of recent, just to kind of elevate it a little bit. And then I had somehow talked him into doing some of my private dinners. So we do a tasting menu series once a month. And that's the only formal fine dining that we do. And it's done in our private room in our bar. It seats 12 only. It's a 5-course wine and food pairing menu. It's my favorite thing. You sit at the same table. So you may know some people, you may not know anybody, but you're going to have a conversation and share this meal and share this experience with 11 other people. And I think it's been by far my favorite thing that we do in that building. We just did it on a farm for last month. A microgreen grower that we use has a farm locally here where they grow. And so we went on the farm and I brought the whole setup out there, and we did a beautiful tablescape and had the dinner right on the farm. So those guests thought that was very cool. I don't think anybody in Myrtle Beach is really doing that.
Yeah.
So it was fun for them to sit right next to where their food was being grown and have a meal and speak to the people that are farming it. And
did that go off without a hitch? Transferring all of that to a farm?
For the most part, yeah. I'm lucky enough that because I was in the wedding industry, I have some good friends that are event planners. So I looped in my friend Ash Events, Ashley Newkirk with Ash Events, and she helped me with making sure the rentals got there that morning. And the only thing I didn't think about was we were on a real working farm, right? So we're putting this, I have this vision in my head with the field, and it is beautiful. But then you don't think about that the field is an actual field on a farm, and it's not going to be even. And so that was something that I hadn't thought about, where I'm like sitting here putting cardboard underneath the legs of the tables to try to get the even, because I was like, oh, this, I didn't think about this part of it. But everything else went great, I think. The guests, it was something new for them. They were out away from the beach, so you get a clear sky and see the stars and hear birds and hear nature. And so it was very peaceful. It was beautiful.
Wow, good for you. I thought you were going to say that there was a cow patty involved here.
No, there's no cows on this one.
Okay. No random chickens getting crazy. What have you got in the future? Everything is going smoothly, right?
Yeah.
As you mentioned, the area is not really developed. Is it because of what you've put in? Is the city saying, oh my gosh, we're getting requests for other businesses want to move in and partner with you?
I think they have always had a vision that they wanted to make downtown an area where locals went again, because right now it is very much been a tourist destination. There are not a lot of places by the beach that local, there's no space, right, where we're going down. They're like, I love being in this neighborhood downtown, which is crazy. I think they had this vision that they wanted to scale it up a little bit, make it a little bit nicer. I was one of the first ones on the street to open. And since then, we've had other ones open that are really nice as well. I think downtown's going to be a really cool neighborhood once it's all said and done, where it does need to develop. They're looking at doing long-term residential condos and a boutique grocery and having the art museum down there. And there's art galleries down there now. But 9th Avenue was slated to be the center of what will be the Art and Innovation District. So being right on that street that they're developing, that's where they're going to have festivals and shut down the streets. That's where the core of this district is going to be. So being able to go down there and have an opportunity to be there, and then also have the opportunity once, you know, the tax credits run out for the city to purchase disability, and these were things that were great for me long term. And the city, I think, they've been incredibly supportive of me and my concept.
A guest comes in. Lisa would recommend having what wine and what food and what experience? So they come in. What would you recommend? This is what the tasting room on 9th is all about.
Oh man, this is my favorite. So I would absolutely recommend the chef's board, which is our charcuterie board. We have, I want to say, about 15 cheeses, 4 or 5 meat. So with the chef's board, you get an ounce of everything. And then you also get, obviously, like the jams, the nuts, the fruits, the olives, crackers, breads, spreads, things like that. But it comes on one big, beautiful board. That is my absolute favorite. It's something that we are kind of getting known for. It's different than anywhere else around here. So that, I think, would be my go-to recommendation. And then from there, that allows you the ability to go through a plethora of wines, which is fun. So I love a crisp white. That's just kind of what I go to most of the time. But we have a beautiful Chablis by the glass. We have a Sancerre by the glass. Both of those would be a recommendation for me. Newer wine drinkers, I always tell them to start with a Riesling. We have the Willamette Valley Riesling. It's beautiful. It's balanced wonderfully. But we have a Chianti by the glass. And we have some really cool higher-end blends by the glass. So we have Chateau Musard in the machine right now. DeLille, which I really love. That's in the machine right now. Mathiasson's in the machine right now. So the ability to be able to have some higher-end wines and that board is my recommendation always, because there's nowhere else in Myrtle Beach that you're getting high-end wines by the glass.
If the tasting room were a wine, what kind would it be and why?
That's a great question.
Would it be sassy? Would it be classy? Would it tart? Would it be sweet?
It would be a complex, bolder red, almost like a burgundy, like an older burgundy, something to where, like, when you open it, you get one version, but as you go through it and as you live through it and as you let it open and as it grows on you, it kind of ebbs and flows and changes and you fall in love with it. That would be the tasting room.
Okay. Nicely done. I kind of went through the experience with you there, as I was mentioning.
Yeah.
What's a wine trend you secretly love or love to hate?
Love or love to hate? Yeah, I don't know. I'm not a big trend girl. I think it was interesting when people were trying to make, and I think it was more like the Somme in bigger cities when they were trying to make like Pet Nat and like all of these orange wine. Some of them are really great and I love, but that's, I mean, you're reaching, if you're getting the average wine drinker to, you think they're going to pick these wines, it's not going to happen. They're super complex and some of them are really hard to get into. So that wasn't like my favorite thing in the world. The organic, like low sulfite, no sulfite thing drives me a little nuts. I think some wines are really good, but I think when you're going, you're like, I only drink organic. And I'm like, well, let me tell you about how these wines are made. They're like, does it say organic? You're like, I don't know, but that's how they farm. Like, so it's that kind of stuff have been like hot buttons for me, or like I'm allergic to sulfites. I did a deep dive when I was studying on that because I was so sick of people telling me they were allergic to sulfites. I'm like, but you eat.
If you could host a tasting with any three people, living or historical, who would they be and what would you pour?
Oh man, living or historical. Cool. Gosh, I don't know. Let me see. Danny Meyer and Will Godara, hands down, are two, because I love them. I've read so much of their stuff. I've listened to so much of the things they've been on. They were a big inspiration and almost like guidance for me, whether it's spiritual or through books, as I was going through this process. So to have those two people at that table would be awesome. Someone else, I'm probably going to like think about this later and be like, no, I should have said this person. but someone else that I would find incredibly fascinating to talk to would be Rajat Pawar. I think he would be so dope to have at a table. I think the way he got into wine is really cool. I think the fact that he can taste wine the way he does is incredible. I think him moving into winemaking is fascinating. So he would be someone I would love to pick his brain.
As we close out our conversation with Lisa Lee, proprietor of The Tasting Room on 9th in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, we ask who you'd love to serve to, and you said Raj Pawar, who is a award-winning author, globally celebrated sommelier, and is the founding member, proprietor, and winemaker for Evening Land Vineyards. So what is your answer?
Oh, man. What do you pour the people that already know good wine? That's hard. I think a fun one that I had, I really wasn't a huge fan of orange wines. So that was newer to me when I finally found one. There's one called the Vice Brooklynites, and it's an orange Gewurztraminer. And I have it on my list, and I find it to be completely lovely and a lot of fun and not fussy.
got a couple more here. If they made a movie at the about the tasting room, who would play you?
I don't know. Maybe I would. I mean, I would personally love like a Jennifer Aniston. I love her, and I think she's a little quirky. And I don't know. It'd have to be somebody that was a little bit off their rocker, I think. Like, definitely a dreamer, but somebody that doesn't take life overly serious, will go through a million emotions a day, but still come out like, it's going to be great, guys, you know? So, I don't know.
Well, I think we can live with Jennifer Aniston.
Jennifer Aniston. She's great.
If the tasting room had a scent.
It does kind of have a scent, actually. So I'm obsessed with smells. I know that's like anti-som. Like, you're not supposed to wear perfumes. You're not supposed to overdo smells because, and I'm like, okay, I'm a normal person too. So let's get through this problem I'm having with learning that I'm not supposed to wear all of these scents. But I have the hotel collection in my bar, the diffuser, the scent diffuser. And we use Dream On. And it's kind of like I think it's the same one they use at the La Meridian, but it's like that green tea, very nice, very easy. We get a ton of compliments all of the time. But I know that smell is a big, it's linked so closely with your memory. Yep. And so for me, I wanted to have a scent that when people walked in, if they loved it and then they smelled it somewhere else, it made them think of this wine bar. So we use that scent every day.
Is there a wine that you keep stocked at home at all time for any occasion when, you know, you get people popping in or what have you?
There's a couple. So Catherine Hall Cab, the 2017 Cab, was like my favorite when I found it. So that one I try to have all the time just because it's so dang good. Volpaia, the Chianti, that one I have at my house all the time. Pizza, pasta, charcuterie, I pull that one out. But for a white, it would be like a Merceau. I want a Merceau. I want a clean Chardonnay all the time.
All right, Lisa, the proprietor of the tasting room on 9th. The last question, the pressure is on. Just give me one word to describe the tasting room on a Saturday night.
Saturday night. Could it be seductive?
What?
I would say seductive. Yeah, because I think when you're sitting in the line, I know, I'm like, I'm going to go racy at this one. Everyone's like, energetic. I'm like, no, we're sexy. So I think when you're sitting in a lounge or you're sitting at the bar, I was very specific about lighting temperatures. Everything's on dimmers. So the light gets very warm. It's very low. We have music on. That's a little bit more of like an Ibiza lounge deal. So I think when you're there and you're on a date or you're with people, I think it can be very seductive and very sexy and very much a place where you're feeling yourself a little bit. So that's what I would go with.
So guys, if you're listening and you want to take your date on a Saturday night and you see Lisa at the restaurant, just give her a wink and go, okay, we're all about seductive tonight.
Yep. I love it.
Good job. Way to drop the mic and finish the interview. I did not see that one coming. Seductive.
Good. I'm glad.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you having me.
The best 5 minute one podcast.
Don't forget my favorite part.
Oh, please like and follow.
And you can like and follow us on our social media and join in our collaborations, just like our website, thebestwinepodcast.com, on Insta, X, you know where. The Best Wine Pod. The Best Wine Pod.